This is Bendik Tatari 8-bit podcast.
Hello, welcome to Antic, the Atari 8-bit podcast. My name is Randy Kindig, and this is a special interview-only episode. This is the third in an ongoing series of interviews with the people behind the companies that still provide hardware, software, or service today for our Atari 8-bit computers. The interview is with Lance Rehnquist, owner of the Video 61 and Atari sales website. Lance has been in business selling Atari items and services for over 30 years and has a lot of great stories to share about his time in this business. I hope you enjoy this interview as much as I enjoyed talking with Lance. Please let Lance know you appreciate everything he has done and continues to do for the Atari community. Enjoy. All right, well, we're here with Lance Rehnquist, owner and proprietor of Video 61 and Atari Sales out of Stacy, Minnesota. How are you, Lance?
I am fine. How about you?
Pretty good.
Good, except for a little soreness for me, but getting old.
Yeah, I hear you. I'm not very far behind you, I don't think, so.
Okay.
Tell us a little bit about yourself and your store, if you would.
Well, it's not really a store. It's a mail order house, but It started out as a store back in 1983. Actually, it started out as a video store. But right away, I saw the value in renting and selling video games out of my store, which most stores back then, you know, didn't see any value in that at all. A few did here in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area, but just very few. But it soon became apparent that video games were, you know, pretty much here to stay, and it became a very large part of my business to the point where I just ditched the video store and just went strictly with selling Atari products. But I also carried at the time ColecoVision and Intellivision, Texas Instruments, Apple, Commodore, PC stuff. Just about anything that Atari was making software for also.
Mm-hmm.
And still have a little bit of that stuff left. But by the late 80s, it was pretty much all Atari.
So,
and I did some distribution for Atari and did a lot of service work for them and went strictly mail order by the early 1990s.
So how long have you been in business? What year did you actually start?
1983.
Okay, so wow. 32 years now?
Something like that, yeah.
Years?
I think I'm the oldest surviving Atari dealer on North American continent. I don't know about the world, but I know that DNC told me he got it into it in 1984 and Best Electronics 1985. And I got into it in 1983.
Wow. Okay. That's amazing. That's a long time. Is this a full-time thing for you then?
Oh yeah. I don't work for anybody else. I've pretty much been self-employed the majority of the time. There was a short time I worked for a Nintendo Tengen distributor, but that's a very, very long story, and it's very Atari related. But outside of that, it's been strictly Atari.
Okay.
I never when I worked for the Nintendo Tengen distributor, I still was operating my own business, Video 61. Never shut it down, but maybe someday in another podcast we can get into how that happened.
Okay. So is this just you, or do you have any staff or partners?
I used to have employees, especially during the distribution era, but of course, you know, the Atari market shrank, you know, it's still fairly vibrant today, but nowhere near, you know, what it used to be.
Sure.
So I pretty much operate this all by myself and have for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you said you sell just Atari stuff, I mean, you're talking the entire line of Atari, right?
Whatever I have left. I still have, you know, for the game machines, every game machine Atari made, I still have software left. Not as much as, you know, I had in its heyday, but I still got quite a bit of it left and quite a bit of stuff left for the Atari 8-bit and the 16 and 32-bit computers. There's a few items I've ran out of. I mean, I don't have any more Atari portfolio or anything for the Pong machines left or anything like that anymore, but everything else, I have some stuff left and some stuff I got quite a bit left.
So can you kind of go into that a little bit as far as Atari 8-bit items that you still have and that you sell?
Well, I still have quite a few cartridge titles, and you know, some of them I have more of than others. Excuse me. I have you know, quite a bit of floppy disk programs left. I have a few cassette programs left, but most of those are gone now. Just a few titles left, and not too much. As far as hardware goes, most of the new hardware is gone. The only hardware I have left is basically customer returns that I got out of Atari, and I either refurbish those or I rebuild those. You know, disk drives and the computers. Mm-hmm. I have some cassette drives left new in the box, but the boxes are getting pretty beat up. They've been around for a long time, and the drives are new, but of course, as this stuff ages, belts are drying out and gears are drying up and things like that. So
sure.
I have to test every one before they go out the door to make sure they work.
Mm-hmm.
Got a few modems left new in the box, but that's pretty much it.
So whatever inventory you got many, many years ago is pretty much what you continue to sell. You don't buy hardware or software from other people and then resell it or anything like that?
Very rarely do I ever buy anything when somebody approaches me. I used to get approached a lot,
mm-hmm.
especially back in the 90s when there was still some of the stuff floating around.
Sure.
But because I had purchased so much of it from Atari, I used to buy directly from the most third-party manufacturers too. Because I distributed it, I used to get a lot of stuff from, you know, Activision, Avalon Hill, companies like that. But of course, they're either A, out of the business, or these companies have gone under. So I had quite a bit of it already. But it's not that I say no to people that approach me now. I'm very careful. You know, it's been a long time, and a lot of these boxes now are getting pretty rugged looking. I keep my stuff hopefully as pristine as I can because I have a warehouse. But a lot of people who approach me with stuff, you know, it could have been sitting in somebody's garage or a flea market or whatever it is. So I'm pretty picky now about if I do buy anything. And of course, it's got to be something I need. If it's something I got a lot of, no, I don't purchase it. Most of the stuff that I sell came from Atari themselves or third-party manufacturers.
Mm-hmm. So what Atari 8-bit items do you have the most demand for?
Well, it really fluctuates. Right now, I'm selling a lot of games on floppy disk, but sometimes it dies, and I don't sell anything on floppy for months at a time. Cartridges, of course, are highly sought after and collectible, and easy, quick loading in actual Atari hardware, and probably overall, that's what sells the most.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it just depends. Sometimes there's just a spurt, and people got to have it on floppy. So
You're probably getting ready to gear up, aren't you? With the Christmas coming up, do you get a lot of demand in the month of December?
Oh yeah, Oh yeah, it. I usually run a holiday sale. I usually post it on my website right after Thanksgiving on that weekend, and that's when we get quite a bit of business. So I'm gearing up for it. So hopefully I'm not too old and sore this year to handle it, but I'm getting ready.
as you mentioned, there's obviously much less demand today than there used to be for Atari 8-bit stuff, although mm-hmm. there's a bit of a resurgence. So just how much Atari 8-bit business do you do? I mean, it must be enough for you to keep your doors open, so.
Oh, yeah, it's a full-time business for me. Yeah. Like I said, I don't work for anybody else. Mm-hmm. There are people out there who say, you do this full-time? Oh, yeah, I do it full-time. No, it's not what it used to be, but in the late 80s, I told my family, I said, well, if I'm still doing this in 1995, I'll be stunned. And then, in 1995, I was going, well, it'll never go past 2000. And of course, today, I don't even mention it anymore. it's still stunned me that with the game machines and computers that are out there today and the telephones and tablets and, you name it, it's out there. I still get orders. I have a warehouse with overhead. There's insurance and all sorts of other stuff I have to pay for it. And of course, I got to make enough profit to pay for all that stuff. And
sure.
And of course, make a living, and I still do.
Yeah, have you seen a resurgence of any sort in the last 5 to 10 years with the vintage computing kind of becoming, a popular thing or somewhat popular thing? Have you seen any sort of resurgence there?
Well, yeah, it's always kind of been there. It kind of ebbs and flows. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that's surprised me is I was involved in a very first homebrew project that ever came out, and I did it with a fellow by the name of Harry Dodson, who's him and his wife are very close friends of mine and my family, and Harry's kind of famous in the Atari world, and I met Harry through Atari back in the late 1980s, and we put out a cartridge, and it was for one of the Atari game machines, and it was actually a product that Atari themselves were going to publish, but Jack closed down all the 8-bit lines in 1991, and Harry and I decided to do it on our own, and we bought some of the stuff out of Atari, and I bought considerable amount of stuff out of Atari that had never seen the light of day, and so we started fooling around with stuff, and how many people now today are producing and publishing software for the Atari 8-bit line of computers is just incredible, and of course a lot of the stuff that's coming out is very well done stuff. Mm-hmm. Stuff that probably should have been done, as far as quality wise in the 80s and early 90s, but wasn't happening then, but boy, it sure is happening now. They pushed that 8-bit Atari, especially the guys out of Europe. I know a few of these European guys, and I try to keep in touch with them from time to time. But boy, they can really make that 8-bit hum. It's something else.
And that is amazing. And it's not even only on the software side. There's a lot of hardware upgrades or
yep.
enhancements that come out of Europe or Poland in particular, it seems like, as well as the United States. So.
Yeah, I won't hold back my own country. My own country's done a lot of cool stuff too, including people I've worked with and myself too.
Mm-hmm.
The Tempest Extreme game we brought out, boy, the people who programmed that, they were second to none. It's just an awesome game.
Yeah, if we could, let's go ahead and talk about that. So you have a relationship with Sal Esquivel, right?
Yep.
And he's got a group, and I've already interviewed him Mm-hmm. It may or may not have aired before this one. I'm not sure, but you know, he's got some software that he and his team have developed, and they sell it through you, I believe, right?
Yeah. It basically it. You know, I'd added on a little bit here and a little bit there with some of their stuff. I'm not a programmer. I know my way around it a little bit. I've known quite a few people who programmed. I knew a few of the programmers that worked at Atari, and so I have a little bit of idea how some of this stuff works, and as far as games are concerned, and because I sell so many, I kind of have a insight on, you know, what sells, what doesn't, what people want, and what they complain about, and what they like, and things like that. So I add my 2 cents worth in here and there. And financially, yeah, I back a lot of this stuff financially. Hmm. And as far as, you know, hardware and things like that, cartridge boards, shelves, EEPROMs, you know, who's going to burn it and all that other stuff, I do all that.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Oh yeah, yep. I do all that. I make the cartridges, test them, the whole schmear. I beta test the games, but I'm not the most important guy. The most important guys are the ones that do this programming, and man, they're good.
I was going to ask you if you made any of your own hardware and software, so I guess that kind of answers that question. You do it by taking software primarily from people like Sal, and then you burn cartridges and sell those on your site.
Oh yeah, we have a new game coming out here real quick. Hopefully we'll have it out by Christmas. It's called Delta Space Arena, and one of the people from Sal's group has programmed it. It's a pretty nice game. We've been beta testing it, and we think we got it now to. All the bugs are worked out of it, and it's looking good, and hopefully we'll have it out by Christmas. There's a few other games that are in the pipeline too. Those probably won't be coming out till next year, but they will be. And then of course there's quite a bit of stuff we got out of Atari too that never got released and seen the light of day.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see some of that stuff on my website. And from time to time, when I get a chance and I have a few spare minutes, which is not very often, I'll dig through many of the boxes and hard drives and floppy images and EEPROMs and whatever it is, and try and find something that I can figure out how to get it to work. And once it's working, I'll put it on my website, and that's how some of the unreleased games that are floating around have seen the market is guys like me and Bruce out of BNC Computer Vision and Brad out of Best Electronics. We purchase a lot of that unreleased stuff, and from time to time we'll do a little work and get it out on the market.
Very cool. I didn't realize that. So can you talk about any of the other homebrew software that you sell on your site?
Some of it though goes to the, you know, to the game machine, so I know that that's not your
You mean like the 5200 or the 7800?
I haven't done anything yet with the 5200, even though I do have 5200 stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I've sat on it for years, and unfortunately the 5200 is not one of my favorite Atari game machines.
Okay. Well, the controller certainly is something
well,
that's not very nice.
That is it. I've estimated, and I've rebuilt tens of thousands of Atari.
Oh, really?
Controllers. Yes, over my lifetime, and it's absolutely. There's times where I wake up in the middle of the night and just sweating. It's just such a nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
I got to do another pair tomorrow. I just can't. Stand them, although the breakout, super breakout is awesome on the Atari 5200. I'll give it that much, but it was a disaster of a machine, and I just, you know, yeah, I do a lot with it, but it's not my favorite. But all the other game machines and computers, I really love. There's really very little Atari ever did that I didn't like, but the 5200 was kind of one of them that. So I haven't done anything with any 5200 stuff that I found, not a thing.
Mm-hmm.
But and I haven't really done much with the 2600 either. It's the 7800 is I've done more stuff with, and the Atari Lynx. I've done some stuff with, and the Atari Jaguar. I've done a little bit of stuff with the Atari Jaguar. As far as the Atari 8-bit stuff is concerned, there might be a few homebrew games that people ever approached me with. There was a blackjack game that I put out that was pretty cool, and there's another one called Hack. It's basically stands for Heavy Armor Combat. A homebrew guy approached me with that one, and it's basically 2600 combat only on the Atari 8-bit. Much better graphics and actual two-player head-to-head play to it. It's a real nice game.
Two-player head-to-head via how? Via SIO?
No, joysticks.
Just two people with two joysticks, okay.
Yep, two people with two joysticks, yes. But most of the other titles I either got purchased out of Atari, because Jack did do a few things sort of right every once in a while. One of them was to either secure the rights to a lot of 8-bit games, or he just bought them out outright. And that was, during the video game crash, and right after that, many of these companies were folding and going under fast, desperate for cash, or was selling the stuff out really cheap, and next to nothing. And Jack bought a lot of those games. That's how some of those games appeared on the XE game machine.
Hmm.
You know, Load Runner and things like that.
Right.
Some of the Electronic Arts stuff, the Synapse stuff. And he had tons of it, and he didn't do anything with any of it. It just sat there. He had all sorts of images. Some of the stuff had been, quite a bit of it had already been prepped for cartridge. They were originally on floppy disks. Some of the stuff, he did enhance it a little bit. Like, let's say the game Choplifter looks, far different than the original release. But when we were in the offices buying a lot of stuff out, and they would just wholesale sell us a computer or computers, they would call up and say, we're closing down this office and there's 20 Atari TT computers in here. They got, X amount of RAM in them, and this is the size of the hard drive and everything else like that. And, make a bid on them. And I'd bid on them. If I won the bid, they'd ship them off to me. I'd turn them on, and they didn't even wipe any of the stuff off the hard drive.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so, but again, some of it was encrypted. They'd ask for passwords, and some of that stuff you will never find out what's on it.
Mm, oh, yeah.
Yeah, but other stuff, there were sitting games, or they'd ask us to bid on part numbers, lots of part numbers, and we'd bid on it and get it, and we'd open them up, and there'd be prototype cartridges in there, rolls and rolls of EEPROMs with numbers on them. Chips, parts, who names it? So, the stuff is in there, just all sorts of stuff. And so you'd sit there and look at it and go, what's this? It's a 2764 EEPROM. Well, I know those are used a lot in 8-bit cartridges. Let's start plugging them in and see if we can get some of the stuff to work. So some of the stuff, yeah, we got to work. And the stuff we got to work, you'll find it on our website, a game like Berserk that never saw the light of day.
Mm-hmm.
That's where that game came from. So, and we have other games like that on our website too. Just quickly come to mind, something like Super Pac-Man or Junior Pac-Man, which Junior Pac-Man, I really chided them for not releasing Junior Pac-Man. I couldn't believe it. The Junior Pac-Man for the 2600, yes, it's very well done. But the Junior Pac-Man for the Atari 8-bit, even today when I plug that in and show people that haven't seen an Atari 8-bit, they just go, wow, you know, what a game, you know, and, you know, they may have the newest PlayStation or whatever it is at home, but, you know, they're just completely stunned by it.
Huh. I didn't know, so it's much better than the Pac-Man that they actually released for the Atari 8-bit.
Yeah, the Pac-Man for the Atari 8-bit is, you know, it's well done. You can plug that one in, too, and people go, oh, wow, you know, it looks just like the coin-op version, except for it's missing the intermission. Mm-hmm. But when you plug in the Junior Pac-Man or Pac-Man Junior, whatever you want to call it, it's a stunning, a great side-scrolling game. It's very fast, very responsive, very colorful. A really nice game, and Atari did nothing with it. And there were all sorts of other games like that, too, that is just, but someday, if you ever do another podcast with me, this has to do with me going to work for a Nintendo distributor. I can give you some insight on what they thought of video games. You'll be stunned. But, you know, we can do that another time.
Okay.
It's a long one.
Okay. Yeah, don't let me forget about that, because I definitely would like to do that sometime.
Okay.
So do you have your own collection of Atari 8-bit hardware and software?
Oh, yeah. You bet.
Okay. Anything rare or unusual in that collection?
Oh, I got prototypes.
Oh, wow.
Yep, I got lots of prototypes.
You don't have a 1450 XLD, do you?
I've got a motherboard for it.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Wow. That's amazing. Do you have pictures of that anywhere? Or?
No, but I probably should. I did put a picture up on my website, or a JPEG, or whatever you want to call it, up on my website on my 1989 distribution agreement with Atari.
Okay.
But, you know, all the rare boxes and things like that, I thought about doing pictures of those and putting them up on my website. Kurt Vandell, which you probably are familiar with.
Yeah,
back in the 90s, I sent him a few pictures of a few of the rare ones I had and boxes, and he went, oh, there's one there, I see. You want to part with that one? And then, nope. But a few of the rare boxes have unfortunately been destroyed, and when you're running a warehouses can sometimes be dangerous places.
Mm-hmm.
But we can go into that story another time, too, because that's a long one. But I may have hundreds, thousands, maybe more boxes of
That's your personal collection?
Personal collection, just boxes alone, besides the floppy disk cassettes and cartridges.
Wow. So this is stuff you don't sell and you're not going to sell, and you're just planning on keeping it?
Yep. It dawned on me in the 1980s. Maybe around 87 or 88 or so, and that's when I first contacted Atari, was, I think, 1988, and, you know, what the heck is going on here? Because I was used to just picking up the phone, and I ran retail outlets in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area, and I was used to just picking up the phone and calling and saying, hey, you know, I'm out of this, and I got to supply my stores, and I need X amount of these, or whatever it is. And I started calling many of these third-party developers, and, you know, they were out of business. And I'm going, gee, you know, I didn't keep one of these for myself. I better start keeping one of these for myself.
Yeah.
It looks like a lot of these guys are going out of business. So that's when I started collecting. But I also noticed an uptick of collecting like that around that era, too. People would be coming into my stores and saying, you know, I'm starting to collect Atari 2600 games or whatever it is, and I'm looking for titles I don't have. And that, you know, in that era kind of gave me an inkling that it doesn't look like Atari's going to die, even though it was being run so unbelievably poor that it was bound to die. But it doesn't look like it, as far as the fan base is concerned, that it's going away. It didn't go away. And of course, today it's, you know, how many decades later, and people are still buying the stuff. So it's surprising that people are still buying the stuff, even though they can, you know, download the stuff basically for free, you know, on a lot of these download sites on the internet.
Yeah.
You know, put them on flash drives, SD cards, you name it. But they still want the original stuff, and I can't blame them because I still do too.
Yeah,
I would rather play it on our original hardware. I found that the emulators are still even today very poor. I like playing it on real hardware, and it plays good, and I like it.
I'm with you on that. Some of the emulators, I think, are pretty good, but there's nothing like playing on the real hardware. I mean, it's
yeah, they're pretty good. They can show you a real nice picture, but a lot of times when you get deep into these games and it starts being hardware-related stuff,
right,
all of a sudden those emulators don't work too well.
Mm-hmm.
And I have my doubts that, because in the 90s I kept hearing, well, the next emulator is coming out, that fixed all these problems, and it will be rock solid. I've been hearing that for 20 years, and the next emulator is probably coming out soon, the next version of it, and it will be fixing all the bugs from the last one. But they'll discover a bunch more. So, yeah, real hardware is the way to go. And some of the people who do programming, if you're listening to this, test it on real hardware. You'd be surprised the bugs you run into when you write it on an emulator and just put it right out on the real hardware.
Yeah.
You will be stunned how many bugs you run into. I know. I've seen it firsthand.
Hmm. I hadn't thought about that. Yeah, if people just use an emulator, yeah, I can see that they might run into issues.
Oh, they will for sure. I've never seen one that, I mean, there are no bug-free programs that I know of. I mean, you know, you can always find something. I mean, you know, some of the best programmers in the world, some of the best programming teams, some of the biggest companies, whatever, put stuff out. There's going to be bugs, there's no doubt about it. But boy, when they write it on an emulator and test it on an emulator and release it, it's a shocker.
Mm-hmm. So do you have any stories, Lance, about someone you met or dealt with at Atari or close to Atari?
Well, I knew people at Atari, and everybody I ever met or knew at Atari were always really decent to me, including Jack. I knew Jack. I didn't know him well. I talked to him a few times here and there, and he knew who I was, and he was always very polite and cordial to me and very nice and always treated me very well. And I could never figure out why. I mean, I wasn't his biggest customer or anything else like that. And when I'd call Atari and needed to order something, they'd pick up the phone, and they were always polite and nice and decent. I got to know some of the programmers and people in customer service and people in the warehouse. I knew people in the warehouse and always good, decent people.
Hmm.
So there were times where, especially in the late 80s and most of the 90s, I would talk to somebody from Atari almost every day. So there's a lot. I wouldn't even know where to begin.
Yeah.
all I can say is that they were all a pretty decent to me bunch of people.
Did you deal with his sons at all as well?
Yeah. Two of them I didn't deal much with, and one I dealt more with.
So maybe we could explore that some more, I guess, in another.
Yeah, some of the stuff is maybe insider stuff that that probably shouldn't necessarily be repeated or repeated as much. Most of it is all business, but again, giving away some of the business secrets is not always something I'm interested in doing.
Sure. So do you have any relationship with any of the other Atari dealers that's still out there today? You mentioned Bruce and Brad.
Yeah, Bruce, Brad are good friends.
Okay.
I like them a lot, and the three of us used to actually buy stuff out of Atari together. I still keep in contact with them, especially Brad. I do projects with Brad, and Brad is a real good source for Atari parts. There is nobody on the planet like Brad Licota. If he don't got it, I don't think anybody else does either.
Yeah.
My area wasn't so much parts. You know, it was more retail. It was, you know, a lot of it was, you know, software and hardware, but especially software. I was really known for software and probably still am today.
Okay.
There are a few dealers that I used to deal with from time to time in Europe. Sometimes they still come forward and either buy for me or want to trade something. And of course, from time to time, like I said, I am open to, you know, a trade or a purchase or whatever it is. It depends upon what it is and how much and all that other stuff. But you know, I do sell to them. You know, I don't know them real well, but they all seem like, you know, good, decent people. And then there's a few dealers here in the United States that they probably more or less, you know, sell stuff on eBay. And so I sell to people like that, but I don't really know too many other outright dealers except for Ben Smith at Bravo Sierra. I don't know too many of the other Atari dealers. I probably sold to some of them unknowingly because I always get suspicious when people come forward and buy two or three of this and five of this, and, you know. So I always know a lot of this stuff is probably destined for eBay. But there could be a few other dealers out there. I used to distribute to a lot of the dealers, so but like American Tech Division, but, you know, they're gone, and a few others out there. There was a big dealer in Maryland that I used to sell a lot to, but they're gone now too.
Mm-hmm.
So
I'll have to try to look up. You said Ben Smith?
Yeah, Ben Smith at Bravo Sierra Computers. Mm-hmm. Ben is a real nice guy. He mostly sells used, but he does have some new in the box programs. So he's a dealer. He has a lot of 8-bit stuff and a lot of ST. That's basically what he's known for. But as far as any other dealers out there, you know, if there are other Atari, you know, dealers from that Atari era, I'm unaware of who's left outside of just three or four guys here in the United States.
Sure. So you mentioned eBay. You don't sell any of your stuff on eBay. You sell it all through your website.
I haven't sold a thing on eBay since the year 2000.
Okay.
in the 1990s, I sold a ton of stuff on eBay. A ton.
You just quit doing that because of the chunk that they took out of every sale, or?
Oh, it was all sorts of stuff. The reason why I quit selling on eBay, all sorts of stuff. When I first started selling on eBay, there was only about 400 Atari items listed.
Oh wow!
Yeah, so my stuff was all new in the box, so it did not get lost.
Yeah.
You know, you could in just a few minutes, you could go through all 400 listings, and my stuff would just be glaring out there because it was all brand new in the box, shrink wrapped, whatever, you know, or as it came from the factory.
Mm-hmm.
But by the year 2000, you know, there were thousands of items.
Right.
It just got to be, and they kept changing the rules and kept changing this and changing that and wanting more and more and more. So pretty soon, to do a listing, you had to be a lawyer. So I decided, nah, enough is enough, and my business is still, you know, pretty good. I just don't need eBay. So I know that there's people who buy from me that do put the stuff on eBay. Because, like I said, it's always a tip-off when they start buying multiples. Or they come back to me and keep buying the same game over and over.
Sure.
I've even had people say, you know, it's my nephew's birthday and he lives in another state. I'm buying this for my nephew. Yeah, right. You know, would you ship it to my nephew for me? Yeah, I will. You know, it could be their nephew, but 9 chances out of 10, they ran it on eBay and then... they gave me their customer's number and
what's the difference? Why should they hide it? I mean, I mean, you don't care, right? You're just selling it to them.
I don't care, you know. Yeah. They're paying full price for it, so I don't care.
Right.
But you know, they may think that, well, you know, Lancet Video 61 sells this game for $29.95. I just got $89.95 out of it from somebody on eBay. I don't want Lance to know that, you know. So,
yeah.
So it, you know, eBay is like gambling. It reminds me of Las Vegas. I've had customers come to me and say, hey, is this a good deal? They email me, and is this a good deal? And I click on the eBay link, and it's a used game for, you know, $36 of the bidding's going at. And I email them back, and I say, no, I've got it on my site for $19.95, new in a wrapper. You know, so eBay is there should be a Gamblers Anonymous for eBayers. You know, so here the guy is, he knows he can get it from me for $19.95 brand new in the box, and he's bidding on this thing, and, you know, for, you know, basically twice the price, and it's used. So,
yeah, that's crazy.
Yep, it's crazy. So, but so they're probably trying to hide a lot of this stuff from me, and I don't care. They're paying full price for it, so,
right.
You know, who cares? It's just that I can't let them deplete my inventory too much. So if I start finding that there's a run on a title, I have to up the price because,
sure,
you know, it's not fair to my regular customers that all the stuff's being sold through eBay, and I've got to, you know, stay in business. So I've had people come forward to me and say, I paid this, you know, this amount of money for this thing on eBay, and you got it for, you know, a tenth of the price. You know, what are you, some kind of crook or something? Huh. It's not me. I didn't put it on there. You know, so I have to kind of raise the price to slow some of that down. So, yeah, if I find a run on the title, you know, price goes up.
Sure. So, Lance, do you attend any vintage computer shows or any Atari shows?
I used to do a lot of the computer shows here in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area. Hmm. Minneapolis-St. Paul is pretty big. Surrounding suburbs of Minneapolis-St. Paul, probably about 3.5 million people. So I used to do a lot of computer shows, and when the Atari Jaguar first came out, when I did computer shows, the lines, I had two Jaguars set up on 27-inch TV screens, and the lines to my booth of kids and many adults and young adults to play the Jaguar used to wind through the whole doggone shows out into the hallways. It was unreal. And the number one game they wanted to play was Raiden. And two complete strangers, Raiden was a simultaneous two-player game. So here these complete strangers are would pick up the joypad and just start playing the game in tandem together, like they were old friends. It was just absolutely amazing. Amazing stuff just to sit and view. The mishandling of the Atari Jaguar is beyond belief. But by the time the Jaguar came out, before it even came out, I predicted it would fail because I knew the inner workings of Atari so well, and you know, it did. Unfortunately, it wasn't anything I was happy about. But as far as any of the other shows that started to pop up later on, I almost got to go to one of them one time, but the business so pins me down, it's so hard to get away. I get so many emails a day, telephone calls a day. I still get letters in the mail. It's just hard to get away.
I'll bet it is, yeah. Especially if you don't have help or you don't have someone that you can,
yep,
you know, let run,
yep,
for a weekend,
yep,
or whatever.
Yep. I don't have anybody else who could run it for a week or two, so it's extremely difficult to get away.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've had a few of the people that run shows saying, well, you know, bring everything you got. Well, I think I got 1,000 items or more on my website, and that's just what I got listed. I have stuff that I haven't even listed yet.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, I've got stuff in boxes that I haven't even opened since the late 80s or 90s when I closed all my stores down.
So if people don't see it on your website, it's still a good idea to ask about it and see if you have,
yep,
it.
Yeah. Yep, I think I got that mentioned in my ordering. You know, if you don't see it, ask, I might have it.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, you know, finding it is always another story. But every once in a while, when I get a little spare time, which is hardly ever, pop open a box and go, oh, look, I got six of these left, you know, and put it up on a website. But if I only have one, I do not put it on my website. I put it in a bin of, you know, onesie twosies. And because if I put it on my website and, you know, I got this one, I might get 10, 15 people wanting it all at once. And then it's like, that wasn't fair, you know. So if there is something you are looking for, don't hesitate to ask. If I have it, it's, you know, I'll sell it to you. Doesn't mean I'm going to sell it to you cheap because I only got one of it. And it's probably rare, but you know, I will sell it to you. So it does not hurt to ask.
Right. That's assuming you don't already have that in your collection, right?
Oh, yeah. If it's not in, if it's one that's not in my collection, that's where it goes.
Yeah. So I don't think I had any other questions for you, Lance. Is there anything else that you wanted to talk about or bring up or mention?
Did you plug my website address yet?
No, I was going to ask you about that, though. How would people contact you or go to your store?
Phone, 651-462-2500. Mm-hmm. You can find the our hours on our website, which is www.atarisales.com. Atari Sales is all one word. And no, I don't have a retail outlet. Sorry about that, people in Minnesota and the surrounding area always want to come to my store, but I don't have one.
Sure, you know, yeah.
It's a warehouse. It's an actual bona fide warehouse. You know, you can't walk into it because there is no retail area at all. It's an actual warehouse.
That's too bad, because I'd love to see your warehouse. That would be fun.
Well, there's people who have threatened to come to my warehouse and looking at. I've been interviewed by newspapers from around the United States, including the major one out of Philadelphia, here in Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Denver, and a few others. But one of the photographers was mad because I wouldn't let him in my warehouse, but. But no, I don't have insurance for you, first of all. Second of all, it is a warehouse. And third, you know, my warehouse was robbed one time.
Mm.
And it was robbed in the 1990s when it appeared that, you know, Atari stuff wasn't worth very much money, but it really was. So I don't let people in my warehouse.
Sure, I understand that.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Well... We you definitely should get some pictures of some of your collection at least, and maybe you can get those to Kurt and he can get them on the Atari Museum website or something like that.
Well, okay. I thought about starting up another page and putting them up there, but you know the time involved is
sure.
just you know sure. it's just incredible, and some of it has gotten damaged and. Not all of it, but some of it, and some of the stuff that got damaged, I've kept pieces of the boxes, but I wasn't happy when that happened, but warehouses are, as I just found out recently, can be very dangerous places, and things can go wrong, and they're big, and in Minnesota, we have some real wild temperature swings. As much as 140 to 150 degrees in 1 year alone, where it can go from 40 degrees below zero to, you know, 105, 110 degrees above zero in the summers. And, and there's a lot of wear and tear on them. And so sometimes unpleasant things happen and stuff gets a beat up. But anyways, yeah, I'll try and get some of that stuff up and you know, we can go from there.
Maybe we'll talk again. It sounds like you had some other stories that would be very interesting to go into some detail on.
Yeah, some pretty interesting, yep. So someday, we'll see.
Okay.
And you guys all have a good holiday and season, and thank you very much.
You too. Thank you, Lance.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
Bye.